December 25th, 1978.
You got elected to the school board at the age of 19.
Yes, sir. Vice president of the school district.
Vice president.
Vice president.
On top of that.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, you've signed the deed of gift form. We've told you the parts of the interview. So why don't you tell us about your early childhood and your background, your parents, and what made you do all of this?
Well, I'm the parents. I'm the son. Excuse me. Of Jesus Rojas Jr. and Norma Zavala Rojas. My grandparents are Jesus Rojas Sr. and Lucia Luna Rojas. My great-grandparents are still alive. My great-grandfather is Juan Rojas. And my great-grandmother is Eloisa Martinez Rojas. I was born in Corpus, raised in Robstown until I was nine. When I was nine, my dad left to work in New York. He was in the concrete business. We moved up to New York for roughly 3 years until my great-grandmother died. On my grandmother's side, my dad's side of the family, she's still alive, which is Eloisa. My great-grandmother, Elvira, passed away. We moved back at that time, decided that we had been away from the family long enough. Came back, we've been here ever since. I went to school at Seal Junior High and the elementary schools here. Moved on to high school, and that's where I got involved in school politics and enjoyed it. And ever since I was little, I was very interested with current events, and I always liked to stay on top of what was going around the world. And I decided to go ahead and give it a shot. When I graduated, I went to Del Mar College. I graduated June of 97. Decided to run for student government. I won. So I was a representative of the student government at Del Mar College. The fall semester, the spring semester is when I decided to run for school board office. That's when my uncle, Judge Lorenzo Rojas, was retiring from his job as judge. And so I thought it would be good for us to carry the tradition and to go on ahead and succeed. But I thought that it was good for me because I found myself, sitting in class at college and wondering why I didn't know some of the stuff that we were covering. And I figured that after 12 years of preparation, that this stuff was supposed to come easy, and it didn't. I figured something was wrong, and I thought about my younger sister, Natalie. She was born in New York, and my younger brother, Jerry, was born here in Corpus. And my younger brother's 12, he's in 7th grade, he's gonna move up to 8th grade. And my sister's in 3rd grade, moving up to 4th. And I thought that maybe I could do something to try and prepare them and their friends and the kids that are getting ready to graduate. You know, we can start to fix this thing up. I thought, what better person to know what the school was going on than myself. A lot of those people that were on the board were kind of out of tune with the necessities that were needed, and were more in there for their personal glory. I decided to run the campaign, had a 7-week campaign. I said to myself, well, I work better under pressure. So we went, we did it, took hard work. I won. I got elected vice president, officer of the school district. After that, we've had a couple of board meetings, and it's been a learning experience ever since. It's not much different from the crowd that, my age. When I was in school, we dealt with people talking behind your back, people trying to betray you, you didn't know who to trust. But, when you're kids, it's kind of hard growing up, your friends and stuff, you lose friends, you gain friends. But it's like, now I'm dealing with an older crowd, and being young, it's like, I'm dealing with the same thing, so much for maturity, because it's pretty bad, and it's fun to watch. Sometimes I can step back away from them, from their crowd, and go back into my reality, to my own age, and look at them from a distance, and it's pretty fun, and it's just been great to learn, and I'm ready to get with it, and get at it, and maybe we can straighten some of these things out slowly but surely. I think it's time. The people are in a stage in this town where it's pretty much dormant. At one time, this town thrived with animosity and work, and the people were proud to be from here. And right now, I feel that I'm throwing something different at them, something fresh, something new, and they enjoy it, and they like it. And I have a vision of this town for one day, for it to be the place where it used to be, and I think the people are ready for it too. And I didn't go in there promising people change, because you can't change things that have been going on for years, but you can start to fix things. And when you start to fix things is when change comes about. Slowly but surely, it can happen. So.
Well, let me ask you a few questions and then we'll go back and visit some of these areas. What is leadership?
Leadership is when you can take control of a situation and make it work, or try and make it work. And whether you do or you don't, is when you take the initiative to do something for the better.
Who is the most effective Mexican-American leader today?
I would go with what I know, and I'm going to go with my personal role model. Is I think greatly of the congressman, Salomón Ortiz. He has gained a lot of respect and a lot of power in Washington, and isn't through there. One day his term will come, and somebody will decide either to run against him or he will resign. But I believe that right now he has a big voice for Hispanics and for our minority. He's up there and he is well respected. He speaks for a large majority of us. So I believe he's a pretty powerful person right now.
Could you be the successor to him?
Well, I wouldn't mind.
Is that a goal?
It is a goal. Right now I gotta deal with what I got, and I'm gonna take it one step at a time, but I don't think that would be a problem if I ever decided to do that. I wouldn't mind. I would like to do that one day.
Which is the most effective Mexican-American organization today?
Well, the one that I know and the one that I hear about, there's two of them really that I hear about. One that is new to me, the one that I'm used to is LULAC. That's the one that helped me get through high school, and I went to conferences with and did that. But the new one that I'm barely hearing is Las Familias de la Raza Unida. That's the one I'm just learning about, that I'm not too familiar with. But it feels like everybody else knows about it. You know, it's a big part of my history, and just now I'm starting to become aware of the importance of that group.
What is the most pressing issue facing Mexican Americans today?
Well, we're still a minority, and not putting too much thought in it. I believe that probably is still the issue here.
Okay. Black and brown relations. What do you think makes the problems between blacks and browns? What are the underpinnings of tension?
Well, between each other, you know, like if there was a black person next to me.
Yeah, in general, what you've seen, what you know, what you've read.
Well, they're put down a lot. They say, you know. I heard a joke once, and I guess I'll go with this, you know, white people always want to throw the blame to Mexicans or something, or Hispanics, better yet. And for instance, the comedian was saying that, with this recent storm surges and everything that's going around the world, they said, let's blame it on the Mexicans or the Hispanics. Let's call it El Nino, you know. And he said, why couldn't they call it El Bobo or something? They discovered it, you know what I mean? He goes, but they could never name it after a black person. He goes, because you wouldn't be able to say, well, here comes, you know, this, you know, if they named it a black person, because they're always late. And You know, I understood what the comedian was saying, but then again, he was trying to prove a point. He was talking about Hispanics and or Mexican Americans, and you know, they try and dump everything on us, but then again, they were stereotyping blacks as always being late or undressed. You know, it meant a lot, you know, that one particular joke. So, you know, I guess that's where we're put. That's where we're stereotyped. That's where, and through each other, also Hispanics or Mexican Americans, we hardly let somebody gain to a certain status, because if he's there, well, why can't I be? And they try and bring him back down and say, well, if I'm not going to be there, then he can't. And that's the kind of thing that I've learned, or that I've seen throughout my lifetime growing up, where the envidia, the greed, is kind of what doesn't let us get up to par where we should be. I can't say much about black people, because I haven't really talked to, you know, or got into their culture, or I don't know much about them to speak about them. But as a Hispanic and a person in the community, I've seen that happen, you know, especially like myself running for this office or whatever. There was people that were there trying to put me down, and I couldn't let myself that happen, you know what I mean? They tried to throw, you know, things at me, and they couldn't really dig any dirt up on me, because I was so fresh and new, just out of high school and fresh into college, that there was no mudslinging going on. And I tried to stay away from some of their, how can I put it, their tactics or the stuff that they use, you know what I mean? And it went smooth that way.
How about relations between Chicanos and Mexicanos from Mexico? What are those relations like here, and what are the underpinnings of tension?
Well, there? That's pretty funny that you asked that. We had the first Ralston High School soccer team 3 years ago, and I was part of that soccer team. We had people that were legal residents from Mexico, and the majority of the team, the majority of the guys came from East LA, where they became legal residents, and then they came, you know, to Texas, and they were going to school in high school. They were legal residents, but they all knew each other, because they had all used to live in Mexico at one time together. They were all friends, you know. It was weird. And I was like the only American, so to say, in the team. And there was tensions between me getting along with them, because it was kind of like I was a minority in the soccer team. So we had our arguments because I was different from them, yet they were different. When I stepped out of the soccer team and I stood into, you know, the classroom, they were the ones that were getting laughed at. And they knew a certain way to speak Spanish, and I knew Tejano, and there were some words that I would say that they would make fun of because it wasn't properly the proper Spanish. But you know, when they were put into the classroom, when they were the minority, they would speak in a certain you know, way that, you know, everybody would laugh. So it was kind of like there was tension there until we decided, you know, we kind of, you know, grew in to it, and we all became friends, and now they're some of my best friends, those guys. But there is that tension where you have from the frontera, you know, in the valley and Mexico. That's always really rough, you know, there in those areas of the on the border. Once you get into Mexico, there's very nice people. Once you get into Texas, there's also nice people into the United States. But, you know, it's always going to be rough there, because you have two different cultures clashing with each other, two different worlds completely, two different types of politics and the way things are run. You have two different things there. So they're always going to clash. It's always going to be harder on the border when you have Mexicans going, you know, Hispanics.
Do you belong to any Mexican American organizations?
Well, I'm part of LULAC. I've been part of LULAC since I got into school.
Junior LULAC?
Yeah. Well, I would go to their conferences, the National Leader Hispanic Leadership Conferences, and that was sponsored by LULAC. So that's about it.
Okay. And in school, did you run for office? Not Del Mar. The
yes. My freshman year, I was a vice president of the freshman class. I decided that in order for us to have a good prom, that we needed some money. And there hadn't been a great prom. There had been proms every year. The junior class sponsors it. So why don't we start early? Why don't we throw, you know, the best prom that we've ever seen? I said, okay. In one fundraiser that I organized, we raised over $900 in one car wash. That was my freshman year. I was freshman class vice president. I decided to run for president my sophomore year. So I was sophomore class president. We did some more fundraisers that year. And then I decided to go bigger for student council officer. I didn't get it. I was a representative. And when I was in student council, we would go to district student council meets where there was a bigger student council. And when you walk into the doors, you'd see everybody campaigning for office spots. And I said, why don't we do that? Why isn't our student council from Austin run for an office for district? Oh, no, we can't. We can't. We haven't done it in years. No way. I said, well, we can do it. We can do it. No, no. I said, yeah, look, I can get it from Laredo and I can get it from Farfurias. They'll second motion and second. Well, let's try it. Well, sure enough, we won. Secretary school. In about 18 years, we didn't hold an office in district city council.
That was you?
Yes, I decided to push it for it, and we got it. The president of our student council in Robstown was the secretary, the district secretary. So that was the beginning, that was the start. That was my junior year. My senior year, I ran for student council president, and I lost. I was another member there. When we decided to go to another district convention, I said, why don't we run for a higher office? And they were like, no, no, no. I said, yeah, let's go for vice president school. No, no, that's too big. That's too big. I said, well, let's go with treasurer. Sure enough, we went, we won. And I was appointed treasurer, district student treasurer. All incomes that went in and out of the entire district. And then district 10 student council is the whole valley. Laredo, Falfurrias, McAllen, Carroll. You know, all these schools throughout South Texas, I was in charge of a lot of schools and a lot of money that came in. I said, well, we haven't held a convention. Why don't we hold a convention? That hasn't been done in over 25 years. We can't do it. We don't have enough money. The monies are there. We can do it. We promised the best convention anybody had ever went to. Sure enough, I'm more than confident to say that it was the best convention that anybody had been to in years. We had comedians, we had, you know, everybody loves Joe Cotton's here. It's a big, you know, restaurant here. They catered. It was, you know, we had a fresh, brand new school. They had built us a brand new classrooms and we had a brand new cafeteria. So we were showing our stuff off and it was good. And I'm honest to say that it was the best convention that they have been to in quite a few years. So I pulled that off my senior year. I was good. I was proud about that. And then I graduated. Top of my class, top 10%, you know, honors and all that. When I got into my freshman year at Del Mar, I found myself struggling. And the majority of the people that had graduated with me that didn't graduate with honors and everything, everybody was in remedials. And I found myself out of place because I was in regular classes, but yet I was struggling. And I said to myself, if I'm struggling and I graduated at the top of my class, how's everybody else doing? And sure enough, I found more people, talked to more people, and everybody was like, well, we never studied this. And I realized that high school was an easy ride, that something needed to be done.
So what are you doing about that now that you're on the school board, of course?
Well,
you've only been there about 2 months.
Yeah, about 2 months. But now I'm telling them out straight on the open is that take some of this trash off the agenda and start focusing on issues that are gonna affect us directly. Start spending your monies in stuff that is gonna affect us directly. For example, one item on the agenda was a $40,000 canopy over the baseball field. Well, we were state champions for 2 years in a row. And these guys wanted to put a $40,000 canopy over the baseball stadium. So that the fog wouldn't settle. Most of the games were played at night. The majority of the games were played at nighttime. Well, we can have this, you know, we can fix up the baseball field better. $40,000, I said, for $40,000, excuse me, last year when I was in the chemistry room, we had 3 Bunsen burners for the entire classroom. I said, and you mean to tell me that with a $40,000 canopy, that's gonna prepare us in what way for college? in no way whatsoever is that going to prepare me for a history class, for a lecture. I said, none whatsoever. So stuff like that.
Did you win?
Oh yeah, I got it. They threw that out right away.
How many Bunsen burners you get?
Oh, we're working on it. We're working on it. You know, that's an example where I told them that if it doesn't affect us directly, I said, don't even think about me voting on it. And slowly, I can say that I'm bringing up issues that were kind of being ignored. The budget was passed every year without anybody ever looking through it. Well, we had monies left over and they would have rather spend it on lawnmowers instead of, you know, another book. And, the maintenance department has its own budget, you know what I mean? But yet the money at one certain school had left over, so they were going to buy that lawnmower for them. And I said, well, no, you can't do that, you know what I mean? We got somebody that's taking care of your yard, you know? Why are we going to waste twice the money on something like that? Well, so those are issues that were being ignored. Or just every year, it kept rolling on. Another thing is about using our power or political gain to meet somebody else's needs. And I thought that was wrong. Where, for example, I would promise person A something, and for return, he would give me something back. And I could use my power to put him for a job as a job. And I said, we're not here to do that. We have no authority to hire or to fire anybody. And that's what the majority of the guys have been doing for years. And I think that's wrong. And I think that they need to start focusing on the real issues. And preparing, getting kids 12 years to school and getting them prepared for college. And they're not doing that.
Do you read your packet for the school board meetings?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Do they?
I don't know. I'm not there. Well, they pretty much know what's going on when they get there. So when I got there, they kind of thought that I was going to be somebody they're going to be able to run over and manipulate, and I was going to be an extra vote. I told them that I wasn't there to be a majority. I was there to be my own person. I didn't belong to nobody. I didn't owe anybody any favors. I belonged to my mother and my father, and that I was going to make decisions that I felt were right, regardless what they said or they did. And up to this point, I will do anything in my power to try and straighten some of these things out. Whether they tell me sometimes, well, you gotta watch it for re-election. I said, I could care less. I already made history once. I said, I'm already in the books. That was something extra that I gained. Now, I said, I'm here to do what's right. And if I'm gonna be penalized for doing something right, I said, well, then let it be. I said, but I'm gonna go and do the best that I can there.
Where do you work?
Right now I'm working at Mercantile Bank in Cal Island. So.
And you're running late?
And I'm running really late.
Have you called them?
Nope.
Oh, well, we're gonna have to hurry up. How did you finagle to get elected vice president?
Well, that took big decisions. They asked me if I wanted to take the president's spot. And I made a tough decision not to take it, because to avoid conflict. When I went to go watch some of the school board meetings before, you could see the two different factions that were on the board, where you had your majority against your minority. You had 4 against 3. There's 7 board members. You saw a separation. And one of the things that I said is that we needed to stop that separation and start working together in order to get things accomplished. And there was 2 people that were running for the spot. One of them didn't want to. And these 2 people didn't like each other. They hated each other's guts. So if one of them was on there, the other one was going to vote no on every issue, regardless if it was good or not. Same here. If he won, this person was going to vote no. So to avoid that conflict, they brought me the question, why don't you go? Definitely. I'll do it. Without a doubt, I can learn. There's no problem. But then I started hearing tension within them. I said, no, you can't. So then I was probably gonna get voted no on everything because I was there and I was young and I had to wait. Listen, and I asked them, what do you think would happen to the board if I ran? And they started for about a minute and a half, each individual. And they said, well, you can't do that. You're too young. We recommend you wait. Then I said, I just finished going through a campaign where I had to prove to the entire city, to all the voters, that I wasn't too young. And now you're telling me that I'm too young again. You know, the same issue again. Didn't I prove that by a majority, by over 40% of the entire votes cast in the city that day? The second person closest to me was 429 votes under me. I won by a landslide.
You got more than 40% of the votes?
Yeah, I got more votes than anybody that ran that day, including the mayor. She won by 500, I won by 700. Well, I said, now you're bringing this issue up to me again? I said, but fine. So I asked that one person that did not want to run, he's kind of quiet, he's kind of okay with everybody, and convinced him to take the position to avoid conflict. That way we could all work together. And sure enough, it accepted. I made the motion, I was second, and it passed by a majority. So it was accepted. So I'm glad that I did it that way. But now, without a doubt, if I was to ask that question right now, if I would take the position, certainly I would take it. I get it like that. Because another thing was that I wasn't afraid as to what I was going into, but it was something new, and it's normal. It wouldn't be normal if I didn't have some kind of precaution walking in there, because I didn't know what to expect. I was the youngest, and I had to prove that it didn't matter. So I was kind of watching out who I talked to or who talked to me, because I felt kind of in danger of something could happen. I didn't want to say the wrong things. So it was, but now, with time, I'm getting more and more comfortable and learning how things work, and it's not as hard as they make it sound. And I'm enjoying every bit of it. I enjoy every bit of it.
Tell me how you campaigned. Exactly. How did you win by over 700 votes?
Well,
who did you run against?
I ran against a lady that sat on the board for 6 years, Ms. Paula Science. And I had two other people running against me, Dora Lizondo and Rodrigo Ramon. Dora Lizondo hooked up with another lady, Katie Science, who was running for mayor. She owns a home health here, probably the richest lady in town. They had signs, elaborate signs, beautiful signs. She was running with them. They called it a team. They had somebody running for mayor, which was the lady, somebody running for the utility board, city council. They had people running for school board, and all that was a team. Rodrigo Ramon was another one. So they were pretty strong. Paula Science had never been beat for 6 years. They're 2-year terms, so she won 3 times, and she beat everybody that ran against her. So there was just things that I felt that needed to be said, that the people needed to know, and I would write them down. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and write these things down on paper, and then I'd go and put it in the newspaper. And the first one I put out, I was amazed that it came out, and people responded to it like crazy. I was like, God, I just wrote that. Those were just things that I felt. But the people went crazy over them. They were like, wow, we read your paper. No, phone calls started coming in. My uncle was running, helping push one of the, one of the other people that was running for judge at the same time. So he was running the campaign, and I was running my own. And he said, I'll help you as soon as I'm through with this one. So I got my signs, and I started talking to people. And me and my dad made, we had plywoods, we were building a house, we had leftover plywoods. We made stencils and we painted them. We had some of my uncles paint my signs. And one of my biggest things was that everybody had basic colors, red and blue, or red signs. And I decided to go completely different with my signs. I said, I gotta be unique. I chose purple and yellow. Signs stood out, from a mile away, and everybody loved them. Wow, you could pass by and you knew, you could see my name, and that was what I wanted. And so that was one of the strategies I used. Another strategy that I used was that I put my last name, Rojas, in the biggest bold that I, biggest type that I could find. And what I knew that I was doing, what I was doing by doing that was that my uncle was a very known man. And I knew that although not everybody liked him, a lot of people, you know, did and were supporters of him because he had been judged for many years in this town. So I said, I might as well use my name to my benefit. And then on one of my write-ups, I went on and I said, there's different purposes for every person. So for my purpose right now is to serve the community as a spokesperson for a group of people that have a voice, and that's my generation and the younger generation.
Did you register people to vote and
yes.
to vote absentee?
Yeah. I went into the high school and voted all the 18-year-olds and 17-year-olds that were eligible to vote. You can be 17 and 9 months, I believe, 10 months, and you can vote. And I registered as many as I could. I went through the government classes, through my ex-government teacher, Mr. Bill Westphal. He helped me out. They registered and went through the English department. They registered all the seniors that were eligible to vote. And went out there into the community. My dad went out there registering his workers, people that hadn't voted in years, registered them to vote. And so I can honestly say that there was people that haven't voted in years that went out to vote this election. So.
Did you tell me where your parents came from or your grandparents came from?
My great-grandfather, Juan Rojas, C. Rojas, believe came from Mexico. His father came from Mexico. I don't know exactly. He was born here in Texas, I believe. My great-grandmother was born here in Texas, and my dad was born here in Texas. I don't know the towns, the name of the towns. They're little towns. My mother was born here in Corpus. But,
all right. Can you tell me the most significant thing that you think you've done and the worst thing that's happened to you up to 19 years of age? And we'll cut the interview so you can go to work.
Well, one of the biggest things that I know that I have accomplished is that going back to what I was saying about greed and about how I feel that our race is, they don't let somebody, go up or achieve a certain status because they want to be there too. And if they can't be there, then you can't either. Well, I know that I've given, people or opened people's eyes that say, well, if he won, why can't I win? And I think that I've done something good in a sense to where I'm saying, go ahead, come on and run. Why haven't you? When you have a variety of opinions and options, you have more to choose from and more, things to either, these are good and these are bad, but you have more to choose from. So if anything, I know that I've accomplished a lot by opening people's eyes, by giving them something fresh, something new, like I said, and not making them any promises, but working on improving our image, which everybody is just waiting for. The worst thing that's happened to me is that nothing yet.
Okay.
Thank God.
Okay.
Thank God.
Well, I hope that we haven't kept you too long. I really appreciate your time.
All right.
And look forward to seeing you. This is June 23rd, 1998.